Hello and welcome to the Breast Cancer Now podcast. This is a series that shares the stories of women and men who have had breast cancer. It's also where you'll hear the voices of our nurses, researchers and experts who help to provide support for today and hope for the future to anyone affected by breast cancer. I'm Bridie and today I'll be speaking to Claire. Claire is a writer and artist. Ever since deciding not to have a reconstruction following her mastectomy in 2014, Claire's been using her work to ask the question, why are thousands of women like me hidden? Claire, thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
If you could start by talking a bit about your breast cancer diagnosis and how you felt when you were first diagnosed.
Well, when I was first diagnosed, it came out of the blue. I'd gone for a routine mammogram. I hadn't felt any lump. And I got a call back and I thought, oh, it's just a little blip. They must have, you know, they mustn't have got a good mammogram. And within the hour, it escalated and they were doing biopsies. And I was totally terrified and I felt out of control. There was someone to speak to me afterwards and there was a support group happening about 2 days later, and there were one a month, so I thought I should grab this one and get some idea. And I remember I was walking to the support group and I realised I'd got odd shoes on. So when I arrived at the support group, I kind of said, I'm Claire and I'm wearing odd shoes. And that's how they remember me. It just seemed like, oh, it's just not important. Things like that are no longer important. Everything was that upside down that quickly.
So one of the main things that sort of you talk about in your work is the fact that you decided not to have a reconstruction following your mastectomy. Would you mind talking to us a bit about that and what led you to come to that decision?
Sure. So when the surgeon consultant was called through to tell me, the way that I received the information that I had breast cancer was that he said, you have breast cancer, you require a mastectomy. What you need to decide is whether to have reconstructive surgery at the time of mastectomy or later, not if, but when. And I couldn't process that. It just seemed extraordinary. And it made me feel that I was being awkward to question whether I should have a reconstruction. So I had to start asking a lot of questions. I'm quite bolshy and quite articulate, and it was difficult for me to get the information I required to be able to make an informed decision. What fact finally came up was that this was a very aggressive, invasive cancer I had, and for me, the sooner I could have it rid, the better, and there was a possibility that the reconstruction at time of mastectomy could delay that. There might have been a risk of infection following that procedure that would have meant chemo would have been delayed. Yeah, the clincher for me was that if I was having a mastectomy, I could have it as day surgery. I could be in and out the same day. And if I was having reconstructive surgery, it would have meant a week in hospital and an 8-hour operation. And I just thought anything else can be delayed. If I wanted to have reconstruction, I've got all the time in the world. Anytime I want, I can come back for that. But the most important priority for me was to get rid of the cancer. So that was how I made that decision.
Yeah, and I think something that you definitely have written about in blogs for us and in your own writing is a lack of representation for women who haven't undergone surgery and haven't decided to have a reconstruction. Was this something that you consciously found yourself addressing in your work?
Absolutely it was. I mean, it took me quite a lot of questioning, and in fact you've got this information in your data, that only 30% of women who've had breast cancer, who've had mastectomies, choose reconstructive surgery. And that means that 70% of women who've had mastectomies don't have reconstruction. But you would not know that from the representation of us. So this is something I really wanted to look at. I've been working with my own body and around visibility and identity and illness for 30 years. I was arts editor for Disability Arts magazine. So this is something that was my territory. It wasn't something I suddenly decided I had to do something about. It just seemed like this is an absolutely natural thing for me to look further at. And whilst I have absolutely no agenda about what I think women should do, I feel it's really important that we have all the information we require to make an informed choice. And if we're invisible, then it's very hard to decide to make that choice. So I made two calls. I found two ways of working that would bring up this subject and help people talk more about it. One was to create what I called the intimate tour of breasts, where I take people walking through a city and we look at the way that breasts are represented in that city, from the classical statuary through to the top shelf in newsagents and sex shops and fine art collections and everything in between, bra shops. And that's been amazing. And it's kind of not finished until I have the conversations with whoever's with me. People can come with me and make me think about things that I hadn't thought about. That's happened now in... First one was in London, then in Birmingham, then Liverpool and Peterborough, and each one's been completely different depending on what I've found, and that's been amazing. And the other thing that I've done is to create a what I call, it's called Truth is Beauty, and it's my single-breasted life modelling monologue.
I mean, incredible work you've already discussed, but I did want to just sort of focus on Truth is Beauty because it's so interesting, the combination of monologue and life modelling and how that talks about body image. I wondered if you could talk a bit about what led you to turn in this direction in your work and specifically towards life modelling.
Yeah, well, I started off as a life model a long, long time ago. I took some time out of my drama degree and I worked as a life model in a lot of art colleges. And so when I started to make my own work, I thought, cut out the middle person, use my own body. That made perfect sense. But that was a long time ago. And I hadn't life modelled since my mastectomy. But I thought, I'm a writer as well. I write poetry and I make artwork. And there was something about performing poetry or showing my artwork that didn't engage me with people that I wanted to connect with it as much as I wanted to. So I was first of all invited to do, I went along to Life Model the very first time as part of an event that organised by Spirited Bodies, which is run by the amazing woman called Esther Bunting. And it's a safe space where anyone who wants to explore how they feel, anyone who wants to explore the experience of life modelling can do so in a safe, curated space. So I went along to that. And I was nervous, but when I saw that people weren't freaked out by seeing me, they were just looking like they looked at everyone else. They were breaking me down into a series of shapes and light and skin and bone and working out how to draw me. And it just made me feel very accepted. And the drawings they produced were very beautiful. So if I find that an empowering experience, then what would happen if I created a performance where I talked about everything, but I life modelled at the same time? So I provided people with an opportunity to really have a good look. because I think that you're not as afraid of something once you've seen it. And then if I could then share those drawings, other people could see women like myself. And there's something very different to a drawing than to a medical photograph, which is all that I was given when I asked to see representations. And they terrified me. So a beautiful life drawing is a very different thing to consider. So then I developed a performance. And I first did it at Esther's series called Stories of Women. I performed with her at the Women of the World Festival. And I realised this was an exciting route for me. So I developed the script. And that's what I've been doing for the past couple of years, really. I've had a lot of people backing the project. I finally got Arts Council of England and Lottery support for it, which took three attempts, but I got there.
Yeah.
I've had Metal Culture, which is a fantastic organisation who provide artists with time and space residences. So that meant I've been honing this at all three of their centres. I'm the first person they've awarded a hat trick to. So I've performed it in a pop-up shop in Southend. And then I've done performances in Peterborough and in Liverpool alongside the intimate tours of breasts there. The big draw have backed it. They see that this is a really important aspect of what drawing's about, that you're looking by drawing. So the people who've attended aren't necessarily artists. Sometimes there are women who've had mastectomies and never seen anyone who looks like them. Mm. I mean, even in support groups, we're all there with our wigs on and our prostheses, and we don't know. It's like those fates where you have eggs in a tub of bran and some of them are hollow. We're like that as a group. We don't know who what anyone else looks like. So to give people permission to share. And in the second half of the performances, the ones that I've been doing recently, Esther facilitates a space where anyone else who wants to explore that can also life model with me. And that's been really amazing. The stories that come out in that safe space, because we talk whilst we model. So it's been really powerful, and the drawings from that, the kind of culmination of my Arts Council is that I've created a website and I'm putting all of those drawings on there. There's a legacy from all of this that hopefully it should help women in the future.
Yeah, it's definitely got such a strong, empowering like legacy and tone to it, and it sounds absolutely incredible. I wonder if you wouldn't mind describing these sessions as a performer, but also as an attendee, how it would make you feel, how it makes people who come feel.
It's been extraordinary. There've been, for example, there was a woman who came along. She didn't feel comfortable about drawing me, but she wanted to come and hear what I had to say. So there's always a crossover of the ones that prefer drawing, because everyone's kind of in an uncomfortable place. If you're used to life drawing, you're really not used to the life model talking and having a name and having opinions and moving about. I say at the start, you know, some of the poses will be 30 seconds, some will be 5 minutes, but you just get stuck in. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not going to warn you. And those who are used to theatre or a performance are really not used to being asked to draw whilst they listen. So it puts everyone in quite an interesting place. But one woman who came in and wrote about it afterwards said that she'd had a double mastectomy, and since then she'd felt she couldn't use communal changing rooms because it was something that she would have always done before, but she kind of felt uncomfortable about it. And she said, after seeing my performance, she realised, why did I have a problem with that? And she was saying, the next time I go to the swimming baths, I am not going to wait squirming for the private cubicle. I'm just going to use the communal space. And so that's been extraordinary. For me, I feel very privileged to be in a space with other people and sharing that. We started saying about how out of control I felt with the diagnosis. This process makes me feel much more in control. Yeah.
I wonder how it might have affected how you feel about your body post-treatment. Has the life modelling changed how you feel about your body at all?
I've always felt very comfortable in my own skin. In fact, my partner, when he was helping me support whether or not I was going to have reconstruction, he just pointed out that because I just enjoy anywhere I can get my clothes off, I'm very happy, really. And he thought that if it would stop me feeling comfortable outside in the pub, you know, if I went to a naturist beach and felt like I couldn't be there because I looked odd, would it be something that would spoil my experience? And actually, it hasn't. I don't have a problem with that. If someone finds a problem with that, that's their problem. You know, it's not mine. I feel real ownership of who I am, and certainly no shame.
That's incredible. So by continuing to discuss the themes of body acceptance and ownership in your work, what do you hope that your work will achieve? And in particular, is there anything you think it could achieve for anyone who's been affected by breast cancer?
I mean, we talk and talk about the new normal. So this is an extension of that, really. You know, I wear a prosthesis when I'm out and about dressed because I just want an easy life. I would love it if it was more acceptable to be wonky. Mm-hmm. I've just done some posters that have the phrase of wonky revolution. You know, it just seems the more open and accepting we are of difference, that the happier a place will be to live in, I think.
Yeah, definitely. Well, you've spoken so eloquently and amazingly about all of your work that you do. I just wondered if there were any upcoming projects that our audience can see your work in.
Yes, there are. It's coming up to International Women's Day this weekend, 7th and 8th of March. And on the 7th of March, I'll be reprising my intimate tour of breasts in Peterborough. I've been invited back by the Peterborough TUC, who have a festival for working women. And so meet at the town hall. It starts at 1. My walk's going to be from 2. So if anyone's in the Peterborough area and fancies coming and looking, in the museum, there's a quotation from Fanny Burney, who had a mastectomy pre-anesthesia, and writes about it. I found 2 examples of breast-related stories in the Women in the Stained Glass in the parish church there. There's endless stories. So that's something coming up. Also, I have just launched the final flourish to my Truth is Beauty project in Liverpool, where I've created a series of 7 fly posters, which are, there's going to be 50 of them right now on the streets of Liverpool. So they're including a series of life drawings of me taken by participants in those sessions that have been turned into full-size posters, and they're over the streets of Liverpool. They're included with there's the One Tick Club. And people are saying that's going to be interesting. People are going to be asking, where's that club? I thought I knew all the Liverpool clubs. Where's that one? And they've got words like jugs. And there's one that's a composite of all the different poses, which is called All the Single-Breasted Ladies. So if you spot those, please do tweet or post them on Instagram, and I'll be putting those into my feed. So that's all in aid of launching my website, which is where all of this work is going to be documented. And that's just launching now, and that's clairecollison.com. And one final thing is a very dear friend who I've met through this process, another single-breasted lady, Anna Versteeg, who has the Bee Book Project. We've decided that we're going to create a special day on February the 5th each year. So basically, I want to draw a line under this work and move on. It's 5 years since my treatment, and I'm all clear, and I really found this work important, but I don't want to spend the rest of my days doing it. But what I would like to do is to have February the 5th, which is St. Agatha's Day, and St. Agatha has been known as the patron saint of breast cancer because her breasts were chopped off, and she, we go to her church in the, on the tour when we go to Birmingham, the St. Agatha's church there. So I want to, with Anna, launch February the 5th as a day to celebrate the breasts we have, but also mourn the breasts we've lost, because that's another thing about reconstruction, that we're not the same. We have still lost our breasts, but we don't have any visual evidence of that, and so we can't grieve them. So I think it's really important to both celebrate and grieve, but I don't want to do it 365 days a year. One day a year will be enough. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, look out for things about that.
Look out for all of that incredible work. Thank you so much for speaking with me today, Claire.
Oh, thank you.
To keep up to date with Claire's work, you can follow her on Twitter at ClaireCollison1 or find her on her website, clairecollison.com. Thank you for listening to the Breast Cancer Now podcast. Make sure to subscribe to our channel on your preferred podcast service to hear our next episode. If you have any questions or concerns from listening today, you can find information on our research, services and campaigning on our website at breastcancernow.org.